Thank you for joining us for the media availability on today's Transit Commission meeting. Merci de vous joindre à nous pour le point de presse sur la réunion de la Commission du transport en commun. My name is Kina LeClaire and I will be your moderator. Before we begin, I'd like to go over a few items. Please note that this media availability is recorded. A copy will be provided to media outlets for broadcasting purposes. Veuillez noter que ce point de presse est enregistré pour les médias à des fins de diffusion. Spokespeople are kindly asked to turn on their video function when answering questions from the media. Nous demandons aux porte-parole qui répondent aux questions de mettre la fonction vidéo en marche. And as always, a reminder to place your microphone on mute until I invite you to ask your question. Veuillez garder votre micro désactivé jusqu'à temps que je vous demande de vous poser votre question. Available for questions from the media, we have. Disponible pour des questions pour les médias, nous accueillons. Please bear with me, there is quite a list. Alain Houbli, Chair of the Transit Commission, Président de la Commission de Transport en commun. Steve Canalacos, City Manager, Directeur municipal. René Amilcar, General Manager, Transportation Services, Directrice Générale des Transports. Troy Charter, Director of Transit Operations, Directeur des Opérations de Transport en commun. Pat Scrimger, Director of Transit Customer Service Systems and Planning, Directeur des Systèmes Clients et Planification. Jim Greer, Director, Transit Operations, Directeur des Opérations du Transport en commun. Brandon Richards, Chief Safety Officer, Agent en chef de la sécurité. We also have Nicolas Truchon, Chief Executive Officer of Rideau Transit Group, chef de la direction, le groupe de transport Rideau. Mario Guerra, Chief Executive Officer and Acting General Manager, Rideau Transit Maintenance. Chef de la direction et directeur général par intérim, Rideau Transit Maintenance. We have Ken Korach, President of TRA, Daniel Hauber, Vice President of TRA, and Christopher Walgren, Vice President of TRA. I will now invite each agency in alphabetical order to participate. You may ask one question with one follow-up. Nous allons maintenant répondre aux questions des médias qui pourront poser une question et une question de suivi. We will now begin with Alex Gouge at City News Ottawa.
Hello. So I have a couple questions about the Gower motion. So my first one is for Pat Scrimger. I'm just kind of curious to what the process to implementing the transfer extension period, what would that look like in getting it into effect?
So the motion was to recommend to council that the transfer windows be extended by another 60 minutes. So right now it's at most busy times of the day, it's a 90-minute transfer window. That's the time from when somebody pays their first fare to the time that their last transfer can be made without the system charging them another fare on their smart card. That would extend that 90 minutes up to 150 minutes, so 2.5 hours. At other times of the day, it would extend 105 minutes up to 165 minutes, which, you know, 2.75 hours. The steps that we need to go through internally, once council has made a decision on this at their next meeting, and we'll get going on that right away, we have to make the change in the database that is loaded into all of our smart card readers, the computers that are on the buses, the computers that are in the fare system. As we do every time we make a fare change, we have to test that thoroughly and make sure that it's not having any unintended consequences, making any other computer systems not work properly. And then we have to go through the work of uploading that database first on a test bunch of buses and fare gates, and then on all of them. Normally we give ourselves a month to get all that work done and tested and make sure it's working. We'll be doing this as quickly as we can, but making sure that we don't break any of our computer systems.
And for my follow-up, I was just wondering what Chair Hubley's reaction to this motion, if it were to go forward, and what message that would send to the public and the transit riders in Ottawa.
Chair, I believe you're muted.
Sorry. My apologies. I forgot I was muted. All day I had an open mic, so I'll have to get used to that button like everybody else. Alex, thanks for the question. My concern with the motion was the financial implications to it and, you know, what what we were going to be asking staff to do, when really our top priority right now should be about a return to service and how best to get there as quickly as possible. So I've had some concern with that motion and the amendments that were getting added in there.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We will now be going to Trevor Pritchard at CBC Ottawa. Trevor, I believe you have a question. Trevor, are you there? We're not hearing you. I see your chat box is on, so if you can send your question to Media Relations, we'll ask it later. So I'll move on to Ted Raymond at CTV Ottawa.
Hi there. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
Okay, perfect. So my first question, I guess I'll direct it to, I suppose Mr. Garrow would probably be the most appropriate person, but I would also like to have someone from TRA, if they're available, to weigh in on this. So just with regards to getting back into service, now RTG is saying 7 trains and a spare by November 1st is what you believe you can offer. And at that point, it'll have been 6 weeks since the derailment. So I'm wondering if you could walk us through what steps every LRT car needs to go through in order to be cleared for service, to kind of explain why there would be so few trains ready after such a lengthy period of time.
Sure. Thank you for the question. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you just fine.
Great. So a couple of things. So in order to get to the point where we are now, there was obviously the root cause, and then there was a hazard analysis and a risk assessment done to ensure that we were targeting the right critical components. And then once that was done, our subcontractor came up with an inspection process on what they believe are all the critical components that need to be inspected to ensure that that they're all torqued properly. And so our subcontractor Alstom has started that process. I believe they may have done 3 or 4 cars. Why not? I didn't check it today, but the first car is just to get a feel for the process, to see the pros and cons. Along with that, there's some time allotted to any work that needs to be done post-inspection, any work that comes out of it, anything that's found. So that the whole process per vehicle, the inspection process can take 24 hours, and then time after that to be able to address any issues that are brought up. So on average, and we're obviously limited by facilities, because these vehicles need to be lifted on hoists, and the bogies need to be dropped so that we can access all the areas required. We'll probably get better at it as we do it, but at this current point, it's taking just over 24 hours to get the inspection process. That's the reason why we said November 1st, to allow us enough time to be able to do that. I hope that answers your question.
And Mr. Raymond, if I could, good afternoon. From our perspective, I think TRA's role in this process, working on behalf of the city, is to assess the thoroughness, the appropriateness, and the completion and verification of the process that Mr. Grau just walked through. So I think that our work comes both in review of the written process, of the procedures that go with it, and then verifying that it's been implemented as expected.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate that. For a second question, and I think this one will probably go to Mr. Guerra as well, or though Mr. Trichon maybe could weigh in as well. No, I think you mentioned during the meeting with regards to the bolts not being tightened that led to this derailment that happened during a shift change, and this is part of kind of the changing of the workplace culture at this point. What kind of steps is RTG taking with Alstom to try to make sure that, because it sounds like it's a lot of human error that has kind of led to some of these these incidents. So what steps are you taking to try to make sure that these inspections are checked off properly, that things aren't, you know, left to a shift change where one person thinks that the next person's going to do it, but the next person thinks the last person already did it? How are you going to try to prevent things from like that from happening in the future?
So shift handover is critical in any operation. Obviously, it's critical here. So obviously, that's something that Alstom is looking to. So we're looking at staffing levels, when the work gets done, who does it, ensuring that maybe we get work done during the shift and minimize the amount of handover when the shift ends. Quality control processes, so that things are well documented, so the shift coming on next is aware of what was done in the prior shift. Having oversight, better oversight in terms of management and supervision, as well as QC engineers to oversee all of that. So all of that is being looked at and is being implemented both in the short term and in the long term to ensure that we don't have any of these. Overlap of shifts is something that we're obviously looking at as well. It's critical to any operation. So all those things are being looked at to ensure that this does not happen again.
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you.
Welcome.
So we will now go to Trevor Pritchard's question. His question is for TRA. He's asking, will you be making recommendations to the city on making long-term structural fixes, or will your recommendations only be connected to getting the line back in service?
So there are two components, two main areas, excuse me, that we are focused on. One is the shorter term issues associated with these two derailments. And I suppose to be clear, with these two derailments and these two incidents, we are focused on not just short term fixes, but also any long term mitigations that may be needed as a result of the investigations, both as a result of OC Transpo investigations and as a result of what we examine and what we find. From our perspective as well, again, acting on behalf of the city of Ottawa. And then certainly, and I think we talked about it a little bit during the commission session today, one of the areas that we are very interested in is the safety management system and associated process, the document and the SMS processes that underlie it. In that regard, we recognize that those will be sometimes longer term in implementation or take a little bit longer to get fully up to speed. But our expectation would be that there would be a strong commitment to a unified approach to safety, a cohesive approach to safety across the project, and that there would be commitment to implementing those safety steps, that larger safety culture over the long term.
Thank you very much. We will now go to Craig Lord at Global News.
Thanks very much. I think this would be for maybe Steve Kanalakis. When we get the trains from RTG and we go through, you know, a 1 to 2, maybe more, day testing period, what happens if there's an issue in those 1 to 2 days? What is the next process for the city, for OC Transpo, for getting the trains back into, you know, having customers on them? What happens if there is an issue in that testing period?
Thank you for the question, Craig. We kind of discussed that, and it was brought up during the meeting. I mean, if we don't have the sign off or the comfort and recommendations from TRA, if they're testing it and it doesn't meet the requirements to put a safe system back in service, we won't be approving it. We're not going to approve it till we achieve a place that everyone is comfortable that these trains are safe and ready to go. So if anything happens along the way from now to return to service, if we have to step back and revisit and start over, we're going to start over. I said from the beginning, I've been categorical on this. I'm not signing off on this till I'm assured that this train system is safe. It's time is important. I get it. People are under pressure. I heard that loud and clear today from the Transit Commission. But there's no way I'm going to compromise people and people's safety in terms of trying to meet a timeline or a created timeline. That's not going to happen. And I'll be relying on TRA and all the other experts we have to advise me when we get to that point. If there are setbacks, what needs to be done to get over the setback and get us to a good place?
Great. And maybe this is then a question for TRA. What is the bare minimum of something that would happen potentially during that testing period that would warrant you advising, you know, put a pause, the system's not ready yet? Like not even just a full derailment, but, you know, if there was an issue with a communication, as you say, on the track, you know, a switch not working, what's the standard where you would say, don't go forward with it, we need to press pause?
Chris, I'm going to look at you to help me fill in some ideas on this. That's a good question. I think clearly, I guess the question is a little bit about the way that rail transit works, just from a global perspective. I mean, certainly there are going to be some level of incidents in any transit system, just as with any mode of transportation. And the idea is to get to a place where the line is the potential for catastrophic incidents, the potential for serious safety incidents is as low as practical and as low both in frequency and severity as practical. You know, certainly I would expect during the testing that for us to be to be comfortable with the results, we would expect that the main testing criteria that are identified for each of the test areas, whether it's testing infrastructure such as track or looking at the performance of the train control system, we would expect that the minimum specifications for those systems would be met. So I don't think there's too much you know, sort of flexibility on those. With regard to test operations, I think that our expectation would be that test operations would operate fairly close to normal operations, to how operations looked before these two incidents. What I would look for, and I'll turn it over to you, Chris, if you may fill in some other ideas, but what I would really look for and where I think I would start to become more concerned is if there are issues either related to quality processes or to safety processes that either impact the repairs for these two particular derailments or indicate to us that the core organizational quality or safety issues are still problematic or still present. In those cases, then that's where I would start to look for more information and want to know a little bit more before we said that we were comfortable with the process and with testing. What else did I miss, Chris?
I think the only thing I would add to that, Dan, is that our expectation going into the testing phase and the trial operations there is that there's a clear plan laid out for what that encompasses and what the process is should a problem arise. And should one of those issues arise, whether it pertains to track or signals or the train control system, vehicles, whatever it might be, that there is a clear step back to look at what that issue was, what contributed to that issue, what could have potentially contributed to that issue, whether it's workmanship or whether it's something that has to do with the system or the piece of infrastructure itself, and then what the team is doing to evaluate that to determine if it's a one-off type of issue or to determine what the systemic impacts of it are. There may be different steps that have to be taken to rule out the one-off and then to look at the systemic issues. And then what does that have in terms of implications for the remaining fleet and for the return to service? So typically, if that type of issue happens at that phase, we want to see that there's a proper evaluation done of what that really means for the bigger picture and what steps will be taken.
Thank you.
Thank you. On va maintenant passer à Julien Paquette à Le Droit.
Hi. I'd like to hear someone from whether it's a
Mr. Guerra or Monsieur Truchon, concerning the last month, how the last month has been, and how important it is for you to get this situation right. Meaning that, well, we've heard during the meeting today, commissioners openly saying that they have lost their, you have lost their trust, and you know there's been the measure taken by the city council 1 or 2 weeks ago. So just if I'd like for one of you to comment on how important this time is, how important it is to get it right this time. How much is on the line basically for you?
Maybe Mario, I can take a first cut at this, and you can maybe add to it. Obviously, you know, we understand the frustration, you know, and we understand that there are concerns about the safety and the reliability of the system. We also know that it's been disruptive for the last 4 months, the last 4 weeks. And, but, you know, what we do is we're working hard to, and we will continue to work hard to bring the system back online. We're working openly with the city, with TRA. Full transparency, you know, there are nothing being hidden. We're just proactively tackling the issues, and we're having a third party come in and take a critical view at the safety infrastructure, the safety systems that we have. If this is what it needs to bring confidence back into the system, then it is what we will live up in terms of commitment. What I can say is, you know, we have the unconditional support of the investors and the partners, the sponsors, our subcontractors. They're mobilizing resources to address the issue, not just the short-term one, but the longer-term ones. And that's our commitment. We're committed to the project. We're committed to Ottawa. And we want to make this work. I don't know, Mario, if there's anything else you want to add.
Yeah, I mean, I can add a couple of things. I mean, I think the question alluded to what we've been doing, obviously, most of our focus has been on return to service and addressing issues related to that. So, you know, the infrastructure repairs have been completed, just a couple of minor tweaks done. So that's done. You know, we think we have a very robust inspection process to get the vehicles back to a safe state. Obviously, we're working with TRA and the city on that. So we'll continue to work with it. You know, I agree. I think the only way we're going to get the trust of citizens of Ottawa back is to deliver safe, clean, and reliable service over a sustained period of time. I think that's the only way it's going to happen. So that's what we're committed to doing. Thank you.
And my follow-up would be a clarification, changing the subject a little bit, going to, I guess it's a bit related to Councillor McKinney's offer to buy a few buses from St. Louis Transit company. Just want to make sure I understand the current situation with the R1 buses and taking away buses from local roads. Is there a shortage of buses right now, or is just a situation where we don't have enough drivers to keep certain routes on?
I can answer some of that. We have the number of buses, we have the number of staff, whether it's operators, mechanics, others, we have the number we have, and we have the number that supports the level of service that we would normally be operating. We've taken some actions to make more operators available by delaying some important technical training. We've also taken some actions to make more buses and operators available by removing them from the duties that they would normally be on. And some of those are backing up regular service, and some of those are providing regular service on other routes in the system. So when we put all those things together, that gives us the number of buses that that we are operating on the R1 replacement bus service. If we had, at this point, a different budget, a different service level, we would still need the same number of buses on R1, and we would still be taking them away from the other activities that they would normally be doing. So I don't think that the tension that we're trying to manage would be any different if we were at a different budgeted service level at this time.
Thank you.
Merci beaucoup, Julien. We will now be going to John Willing.
Hi, Kina. Thank you. It's a question for Mario Guerra. You mentioned during the meeting that there's extra Alstom workers being brought into Ottawa. I think you mentioned between 60 to 70% increase in resources. Are those resources permanent additions to the workforce in Ottawa, or are they just like a temporary a team that are coming in to help out well, to get the LRT system back into full service?
At this point, a lot of those resources have been pulled from other projects that Alstom has in Ontario. So they're being considered as temporary to ensure that we get the obviously the vehicles back in service inspected. But we are reviewing the workforce allotment, as I indicated earlier, and the need for more resources in the long term. So this particular surge is to address the issue, but we're also looking long term at additional resources as well. So I hope that answers your question.
Thank you, Mr. Guerra. A second question is for a gentleman at TRA. And you're in a unique position as an independent set of eyes coming into Ottawa. It's a great opportunity to ask you. Ottawa's LRT system has gone through 2 years of acrimony from brake issues, door issues, catenary problems, wheel flats, and now we have these two mainline derailments for reasons that you're now aware of. And so I'm wondering, in your professional experience, is this strange for a new LRT system to have these kind of issues 2 years into service?
I think from my perspective, I think that there are a lot of rail systems, especially new rail systems, that have hiccups starting out. To be honest, I mean, we've seen quite a few of them, and they take on all different forms, from the infrastructure issues that you mentioned, the vehicle issues you mentioned. It's transit is sort of an interesting business that way, because so much of the infrastructure and the vehicles sometimes are unique to a particular project, and so there are some growing pains. For me, I don't know that I've really done the math to think about whether the number of issues that the Confederation line has experienced over the first 2 years is really more or less than what we're used to seeing elsewhere. But certainly just generally speaking, I think we have seen other systems where the first few months, and sometimes a little bit longer, can prove challenging. Yeah. I don't know, Chris, if there's anything else comes to mind for you.
Yeah, no, I think that, I would say pretty much every project that we see out there, new starts or new vehicle procurements, have those growing pains when they start up. And the real key in what we're looking for here in the return to service and the long-term, the long-range plan and long-term efforts that we've been discussing is that the appropriate safety management system is supported, and that it's established for when that service goes back in. And what we mean by that is that where these issues have maybe highlighted a need for enhancement, that there's that commitment there, and that we see that those resources or that commitment's going to be there for the long term. So that's how all of these issues get managed at the different transit agencies where we do oversight or where we work directly for them, is through that appropriate management of these types of issues when they come up, and how they can always assure that there's going to be safe service put out on the line.
I think that's a right way to think about it. I think that there's lots of rail transit projects and properties that experience challenges, but as Chris said, it's how you deal with them going forward and how you work through them. I think that's really key, and that focus on SMS that Chris mentioned, I think is really a key part of that response.
Thanks for taking our questions too.
Thank you, everyone. This concludes our media avail. Ça conclut notre point de presse. Wishing everyone a great evening. Bonne soirée à tous.